Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Icarus for Reality with Shane Jones.
What is up, inquirers, and welcome to the expanse of deep, open-minded conversation. I'm the one they call Shane, and today for you guys, I have one of my personal favorite fiction writers in the cryptid community, who's going to be talking about one of his new upcoming books that goes into his fantastic series that I had the privilege of listening to the audiobook of, and I absolutely loved it. And coming from somebody who hears a lot of different stories, a lot of different encounters, it's really hard for me to find stuff that I can't necessarily predict. Like, when I watch movies, more often than not, I usually end up predicting the end way before it actually comes. But when it comes to this guy, his story, it just goes on to a whole other level, and I'm not able to predict stuff, but there's a lot of good open ends and a lot of different paths and avenues he could go in. So honestly, I think you guys are really going to enjoy this episode. You guys are really going to enjoy the books, so I highly recommend you guys go and check out his books and his work after the show. But for today, before we get into the fantastic conversation I got for you guys, we of course have to run through the front of house stuff. Not really any news and updates this week, but as far as front of house stuff goes, don't forget to follow Inquiries of All Reality and Open Minds Media on Instagram and Facebook. And for video content, don't forget to go and follow Open Minds Media on YouTube and TikTok. And if you want to join the discussion, you guys can become a member of the Open Minds Media Discord. We have a lot of fun over there, having a lot of random fun conversations. And the only way the community is going to keep on building is with you guys joining and becoming part of the community, of course. And if anybody has an encounter to report, whether it's a big one, a small one, paranormal, cryptid, extraterrestrial, UFO, don't matter. I want to hear about it. You guys can report those to omm encounter reports@outlook.com, or you guys can go to the link tree and fill the specific submission form that says report an encounter. And as far as those go, I want to dive into a lot more of those. I want to have a lot more of you guys on telling your encounters, telling your experiences, and kind of maybe do a little bit of a side tangent to the show where I maybe kind of do shorter form episodes where it's just all of you listeners coming on and talking about your encounters and everything. But the only way that'll ever happen is with you guys reporting your encounters. So if that sounds like something you guys might be interested in, don't forget to hit me up and we can work something out with that. And don't forget to check out my other show, Bizarre Encounters, that I do over there with my awesome co-host, Oren. A little bit of a different format than this show, as I usually say. It's our deep dives and research versus, you know, just the interview open conversation style. We do have some interviews on there, of course, but the majority of that show is us deep diving into different topics. And we also have our side show that we call Bizarre Inquiries that we do for the Patreon. And it also gets dropped once a month on the normal feed and everything. We take in your guys' listener questions, discuss them, let them go where our mind wants to wander with them. So if you guys have any questions that we can discuss on that, don't forget to submit those questions to me because I would absolutely love to dive into some of your guys' fan questions. Doesn't matter if it's off the wall, something serious, something funny. We'll end up coming around full circle to all of them, bring all of you guys into the fold. And if you guys submit a question, of course, even if it is a Patreon exclusive episode, I'll make sure that you guys get a copy of that episode. And if you guys want to support the show, a couple different ways to do so. Number one is to go and join the Patreon. Over there, you'll get things such as early access to the show, live access to the show, a bunch of different merch store discounts, other perks. Still trying to expand and fully figure that one out, figure out exactly what you guys want to see over there. So I'm always open to suggestions. But if you guys want to check it out, see what it's all about, the $3 tier and the $5 tier, there is a 7-day free trial. So you guys can definitely go and check those out. Number two for supporting the show would be to go and check out the Open Minds Media merch store. Over there, I don't just have designs for the shows, but I also have some of my cryptid paranormal UFO type designs that don't have the podcast name because I know that not everybody likes wearing the podcast design. So it'd be really cool if you guys wouldn't mind going and checking that out. And if you guys want to scoop something for yourself, you know, beyond of course being a Patreon and getting those exclusive discounts, you guys can use Cryptid10 and you guys will get 10% off of the merch store. So don't forget to use that before that promo code doesn't work anymore, which will probably be, I'll probably run it through at least till the end of this month and then I'll kind of go from there. But yeah, don't forget to use it while it's available. And if you guys are interested in podcast production services, you guys can shoot me a message through Open Minds Media. Whether you're just starting a podcast or you have a podcast and you want to make stuff easier for yourself, I'm here to help you out. So you guys can shoot me a message and we can work something out. And of course, I have to give a big shout out to all of the fantastic people in the community that sponsor the show. So if you guys haven't checked out I Know Squatch yet, highly recommend going and checking it out for all of your Squatchy gear needs. Rick and Hans have a lot of fantastic designs that I think you guys will absolutely love. And don't forget to go and check out Cryptotheology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites. Over there, it doesn't just pertain to Sasquatch, but it kind of has a full plethora of all the different cryptids. So definitely recommend going and checking that out if you guys are into the sci-fi comic book style art. I wear a lot of that stuff. I wear a lot of I Know Squatch stuff. So, you know, if you guys like all the stuff that I wear, highly recommend going and checking both of those guys out. And don't forget to check out Snarly Yao for all of my friends over there that have beards. He has a fantastic line of beard products and body products that all have this smoky cedar with a hint of mint scent to it. Absolutely fantastic. I use the beard balm every single day and the beard oil, and I love it. I put it in my beard, and then I just smell that minty, fantastic fragrance for a while. Absolutely love it. And Dave over there also puts on a lot of fantastic events for the cryptid community. So if you guys are anywhere near the West Virginia area, highly recommend going and seeing what he's putting on. He has multiple events that he puts on through the year, and he is one of the nicest people I've ever met in the cryptid community. So a lot of fantastic people gravitate towards him. So if you guys want to be able to have a really fun event, more often than not, extremely family oriented, so you guys can bring your kids and everything. Don't forget to go and check that out and mark those on your calendar. And to all of my paranormal investigators out there, don't forget to go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. I use it every single time I go out. It's my absolute favorite. And Barry over there in Dimension Devices is the one who programs and develops it. So if you guys have any technical questions about it whatsoever, you guys can shoot him a message and he'll be able to answer all of those for you. I know he has a lot of new updates and new products that are coming for that soon. So definitely something to be able to keep your eye on. And if you don't mind using the affiliate link that we have, I would absolutely appreciate it. Goes back towards helping out the show, makes it so that, you know, pays for the programs, all that kind of fun stuff. So don't forget to use that if you guys decide to go and pick up a Chattergeist for yourself. And beyond that, every single thing that I've mentioned, including all of those sponsor links, are all available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Back to the show for the second time, author Michael Thompson. How's it going today, man?
Hey, it's going great. Thanks so much for having me back.
Absolute pleasure to have you on the show again. And the difference between this time and last time is that we actually got to meet at a convention. So we've actually gotten to meet in person now.
Yes.
I've gone over your book, your first book at least. I know you have the second one that's already out. So yeah, got a lot more to talk about this time. And we have that personal connection now, man.
Yeah, for sure. Monster Fest. That was a great one.
Oh yeah. And I'll be there again this year. You plan on going again this year?
Yeah, I'm going. We'll hang out. We'll hang out for sure.
Perfect. And I'll actually be venting this year too, so it'll be even better. I'll be hanging out afterwards.
We can
do all the after party stuff like everybody does. So it'll be a lot of fun, man.
Awesome. Awesome.
And then just out of curiosity too, I don't know how far it is from you, but are you planning on going to Squonkapalooza by chance too?
Not currently.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's in Pennsylvania. So I know it's a little bit north of you, but I don't know how far that was from you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit far, but it's mostly the outdoor aspect. But if I could get like an indoor space, maybe I could do a speaking show with them at some point. I'm setting up some speaking events. I'm going to be speaking up at the Massachusetts Cryptid Fest on September 14th. So that's going to be exciting.
Oh yeah, definitely. I haven't actually seen anything for that one yet. So I'm sure I'll probably see something popping up within the community within the next couple of weeks. Then
yeah, that one's being put on by Jessica from Cryptid Bits with General Tidbits.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, she was asking me about that. I think she said, I would be more than welcome to come. That's right. I remember that now.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm going to be there as a speaker. And I'm also going to be speaking for the Library of Congress for their paranormal forum. So that's going to be
pretty cool. Awesome. Got a lot of new stuff, exciting stuff going on then.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as speaking goes, just out of curiosity, is it talking about the books, or are you doing like a presentation on like cryptids and stuff, or what's kind of your plan?
It's going to be a combination. So the main topic will be about how I adapted cryptids and fisherman folklore for my Winslow Hofner series, which, as your listeners know, that's my folkloric fantasy on the high seas about the great Winslow Hofner and all of his encounters with beasts of legend on his voyages. And so the presentations will be about adapting all those different legends into one cohesive narrative, and how I made all those fantastic creatures sort of biologically feasible and believable, kind of a world building thing.
Oh, perfect. So yeah. I definitely want to dive into the book, because I definitely have some things I want to throw to people. Like, obviously the book is fantastic, but you got to listen to the audiobook, because that is the actual author doing all the voices and everything for it, which was like almost a little bit funny at first, because it's like, I know you personally. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, ha, that's Michael's voice. But as soon as like it started rolling everything, I'm like, wow, this is great. You did perfect voices for everybody. And who better not to do it than the author himself? Because you know exactly how you imagine these people talking in your head. So it's like, you couldn't get it better any other way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's it came to me sort of in an auditory fashion. The first line of the first book was the first piece of inspiration that ever came to me. And it was Winslow's voice in my head going, "Have you ever stared straight into the eyes of death and scoffed?" And I was like, ooh, you know, what is that? And so I think we went into that on the previous episode. But that was the first line that sparked my curiosity into that. Incredible world that Winslow inhabited. So I wrote that down and eventually returned to it, and it just blossomed from there.
And we're definitely going to dive into that story, because I know the background of it now. I definitely want to dive into the way you wrote the book, because it's fantastic. But before we do that, of course, just a quick little touch over, if you want, for anybody that may not be familiar with who you are, what you do, before we start getting into the nitty gritty of the conversation. I want you to let them know a little bit about your background, a little bit about your books, and a little bit about what you do, man.
Mm-hmm. My name is Michael Thompson. I'm an independent author and illustrator from Northern Virginia, and I write all kinds of things. I've got a superhero series for kids. I've got an alternate world fantasy adventure novel for young adults. And of course, I have my cryptid adventure series, the Winslow Hofner series, epic folkloric fantasy featuring all kinds of different cryptid legends from around the world as told by one fisherman, Winslow Hofner, who happens to have seen them all.
And the best part about it that which I found was like one of my favorite parts about the book was the fact that he would tell these stories and everybody around him would think that they're just completely outrageous. And then at the very last second, he would like have some little snippet of the story that kind of made everybody go, huh?
Yeah. Like there was artifact of truth.
Yep.
He always happens to be carrying them, and it drives like Keely, the cook, insane. It's very funny.
I like the first one too, where the guy kid's like, oh, the reporter's like, oh, I don't believe in any of this. And then he actually gets the monster to come up to the boat by feeding him and stuff. And he thought he was just about to make dinner for himself. Like, lovely touch. I loved it.
Perfect. Well, that's a major theme in the story is inversion. You know, Winslow himself is kind of an inversion. Fishermen's tales in general are kind of associated with tall tales and things that are generally like believed to be a stretching of the truth. You know, it was this big. You'd never seen anything like it. And but Winslow, he actually, as we see, especially as the story goes on, he has trouble lying. And but he's an excellent storyteller. So Winslow's fishermen's tales are all true. And they're the most unbelievable creatures you could ever imagine. But Winslow just happens to have seen them all.
I love the extra detail, too. When I went through the first chapter with the root beer thing, at first I thought you were kind of just trying to like leave alcohol out of your story so that it could go to like a wider audience and stuff. But then once you got to like the bar scene where everybody was drinking and everything, I started kind of picking up the detail of, I assume that the reason why he drinks root beer is because it makes the stories more believable because he's not a drinker in the first place, where he's embellishing the story. So I assume you kind of do that for that aspect and to kind of give him almost kind of like a goofy kind of quality to him too, that he just has his own little weird quirks that he does that's different from everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Winslow kind of came through with all of those unique quirks, to be honest. His root beer, he seems to subsist entirely on sugar. You know, he has an incredible metabolism. And that's another, in my own sort of meta analysis of my own work, I see it's like, wow, you know, he can't lie. He doesn't drink. He doesn't smoke. He's the exact opposite of what you'd imagine a sailor to be, except upon, you know, sort of hearing him and seeing him for the first time. You know, he certainly has that salty voice and everything. He's got the buggy eye and you know, the whole fisherman getup. But as you get to know him and all these quirks come through, and you listen to his stories, you start to realize, you know, he's serious. You know, he's seen all these things.
Dude, the depth of the characters too. Like, he's my absolute favorite throughout the book, but like by far, just because of just the way he carries himself, like the every aspect of his personality is just absolutely fascinating. But like the depth that you wrote about the characters in the first one, I mean, there was like, of course, the pictures and stuff on like the tops of the chapters, but even like the lady that works in the museum, where you just kind of like can imagine her like goofy presence. And it kind of gave me this weird, like, I don't know if you're familiar with the Series of Unfortunate Events books, but it kind of gives me like somewhat of the ambiance of that, because it kind of has that like old timey, but still kind of futuristic-y kind of feel to it. It's kind of, it's like a hard explanation, but it kind of gives me like the same kind of atmosphere as that. And especially with like the character progression, the way that everybody's kind of drawn, like I imagine them almost being in like that type of like world where it's just like this, it's the past, but it's not in any definite point, but it just has these weird little like mechanical details that kind of give it this like almost kind of cyberpunk feel to it. But it's like a fisherman story, you know, it has like it has its own thing going on. I really enjoyed it, man.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's definitely the town itself and everyone in it, it's definitely a character, you know. And I as I was writing it, the different settings, the different major like set pieces in the story all kind of like had a life of their own. And I found myself as the writer using personifying language and verbs like for things like the buildings and the boats, you know, like groaning and breathing and sort of and different adjectives as well, like on the Sienna when John and Becky are on it for the first time toward the finale of the book. The boards are creaking curiously at their footsteps because it's, you know, so it's like the boat itself is sort of sizing them up. And nature as well seems to have a personality, in the book as well. The storms, they seem to have quite a presence and tend to herald the, sort of announce the presence of, forthcoming monsters.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back. So let's hop right in.
And I mean, even the whole idea too, that you have like the monster hunters, and they're just kind of like mysteriously, they're like mysterious or a little bit like ominous, but at the same time, they still have like the full detail where you can fully envision them. Like the detail I like with like the Russian guy, where, you know, at one point in the book, he ends up hitting him and he doesn't remember him. And all of a sudden he's sitting there on the boat and he's like, wait, you're that guy.
You.
Like, I love those kind of details. Just
yeah,
so
yeah.
Subtle. And you don't think you're going to actually pick up on it later on, but it brings it back full circle.
Yep. Yeah, there's definitely lots of great, very satisfying and very funny setups and payoffs. And those themselves are sort of continue to add credence to Winslow's tales that we're treated to, mostly in the dialogue where he's speaking to the characters, but also in one particular flashback where we see a little bit more of Winslow's past, where the world kind of opens up more and sets up important things for future stories moving forward.
And I mean, I definitely would love to dig into the background of some of your monsters. We're definitely going to have to move into two, but sure. I of course want to lay out everything for like the first one and stuff. And without giving too much of the story away, of course, because people definitely should go and read it. Highly recommend the audiobook because it's absolutely fantastic and kind of gives you that full in-depth picture. Like I was listening to it while I was at work, man. I was just totally captivated and stuck in the story. And I was like, you know, autopilot with my hands doing like labor work, but just fully in a whole other universe in my head, listening to the story. So definitely recommend doing it that way. But I'd love to go over some of the monsters from the first one before we get into the second one. Because obviously a lot of people that listen to this show are really into like the whole cryptid aspect. So I kind of like to hear a little bit about the monsters for anybody that kind of wants to hear what kind of monsters he tangles with throughout the story. And where some of your inspiration came from as far as some of the monsters go. Like, I know you have one that's straight out of cryptid folklore. There's not really any crazy extra added detail to it, but the rest of them I know are influenced by other places. So I'd love to kind of dive into some of your monsters before we get into the second book.
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much. I'm so honored that you enjoyed it and connected with it so deeply. Which monster was your favorite? And I can tell you a little bit about that one. Maybe.
That's a hard one, actually, because they're all absolutely fantastic. Like, I like the alligator that breathes fire just because it almost seems like it's the one that kind of gives the wrong impression, that people would assume that it's this big, scary monster, but it seems to be more of like a loving kind of beast.
Right,
then, of
right.
course, like the giant octopus at the end, Gigantus. That one, absolutely fantastic. That was like, you know, like you said, the build-up point at the end of the story, and it's definitely worth the build and the climb to get to that point, because that's the one where you really kind of get that nitty-gritty impact with the monster, because there was, you know, you thought somebody might lose their life at one point.
Right,
like, it just kind of threw your emotions back and forth all within the one story, where the other ones are kind of set in the past, so you know everybody makes that out okay, but that one being in the present kind of gave it this totally different feel to it.
Yeah, you're totally locked in. You got it. And the interesting thing about both of those monsters is that each of them were based on globsters, which for those who are unaware, that's a unidentified body of a creature that washed ashore. Unidentified monsters that washed ashore at various points in time that people didn't have perfect explanations for. Gambo was an unidentified monster that washed ashore in the Gambia in 1983, and that was sort of our intro into Winslow's world. That was the first chapter of the book. And the fire breathing aspect was an original characteristic that I gave it. And the reason that I did is because there's so little known about that particular monster that there was left a great amount of room for, you know, sort of going my own way with it and putting my own creative spin on it. It was
kind of gives it that like aquatic dragon feel.
Totally. And I think that the clash of the water and the fire is like, it makes it extra unbelievable. And so for me as a writer, it purposefully, I make it that extra challenge of taking the most unbelievable concept possible. And then, okay, let's make that believable. Because then if I can do that, if I can hook in a reader and within the story, if Winslow can hook in John, then the credibility for Winslow is established with that character, which is very important moving forward. And the credibility between me as the writer and my readers moving forward is totally established. And then you are fully invested and fully immersed and believe in the world. If we can accomplish the fire breathing fish and make that believable. And I sort of imagine in my head canon of, how that works is I kind of imagine like a biological magnesium component to its underwater fire breathing capabilities, because that's one of those elements that can do that and create its own oxygen. And so it's kind of a unique way that it breathes.
Kind of reminded me of the mantis shrimp concept a little bit, because they say the mantis shrimp, for that quick 2 second little impact that it creates under the water, because it has one of the strongest punches, there's like a little speck that'll be hotter than the surface of the sun. So it's essentially able to like crack and destroy other, you know, like oysters, like other crustaceans, right, and stuff. So, I mean, you kind of have like very subtly that aspect of there being fire under the water, but it's not to the extent that, you know, Gambo is, but it's still somewhat seen in nature, which also kind of gives it a little bit of that touch of the believable, you know?
Yeah, there's incredible. You can look to nature and find some of the most unbelievable things, like things that make all of these cryptids perfectly plausible by comparison. And then Giganteus, that was another globster from way back in the 1800s. It was Octopus Giganteus was what they called it. It was the St. Augustine mystery blob. And they posited that it could be a supermassive octopus. And so sort of went our own way with it and made it this incredible titan with those great plates and cool camouflage capabilities. Scaling all of the existing octopus abilities to that great size really created an impressive monster. And I really enjoyed bringing that one to life.
I assume, too, that it's partly inspired by the whole idea of, like, the Kraken, too, right? Because it definitely had that feel to it where, you know, you can just imagine it grabbing and gripping over the ship and just ripping the ship in half and just having that old-school sailor story to it.
Absolutely, yeah. And the build-up to that is really special, as you mentioned, because all the stories prior to that are, in some form, in some way, a flashback. It's either Winslow telling the story of something that happened long ago, or an actual proper narrative flashback. And then once we establish all that credibility and then we move into this Giganteus finale, that's happening in real time. And so all these characters who have come to believe are then presented with the fullest physical embodiment of the consequences of their belief and it being real and it being tangible. And it's there. And I still, you know, to this day, when I arrive at those parts in the book, it just sort of like sends chills up my body because I'm just as immersed and I'm just as invested in the characters as my readers. It's a really, really cool moment.
It really shows the personality, too, of Winslow, because he's the one that's like willing to risk his life to save everybody else, too. So it kind of just develops his character more to show that he's not just like some fisherman who's just going to take off on everybody. He's like the one that cares about everybody and wants to make sure everybody's all good. And he'd rather get taken by the monster himself than let anybody else get hurt by the monster, even including the other guys that he doesn't even necessarily agree with their points of view. You know, the monster hunters, he's still looking out for their safety, too, and is willing to like throw, you know, himself on the bomb, essentially, in order to save everybody else.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, he's willing to risk his life for a sign, a piece of the boat that came off. I mean, Winslow, sentimentality is one of his core character traits, and it's kind of a defining aspect of him.
And then at the end, of course, just I love the detail that he just ends up, you know, taking off into like the reporter's office, and he's just like, hey, oh, you're that guy. And everybody's just like, who's this guy? Why is he in here? Why is he rushing in trying to talk to everybody? He's like, wait, I got something to show you.
You're never going to believe it, Chaplin. Yeah. It's cool. And that waterfalls directly into the next book. And that's seeming to be a theme with all of these books, is that they end kind of in a cliffhanger type way. And then it all like splashes onward to use aquatic terminology into the next fantastic story.
Are you planning on diving more into like the background of the monster hunters and mm-hmm. that device that they use in order to track the monsters in the second book? Or is that going to be one of those things that kind of remains ominous until you kind of get towards the end?
Very, very, very astute. Yes, that is going to be explored. In fact, it's explored in the very first chapter of the first book. It starts with a flashback and we see, I'll give you a little tidbit of things to come for you and for your listeners. We begin on Winslow and Scialpi's first field expedition. And we see a little bit about the Cryptolabe, which is that cool monster tracking device. And we see their expedition to look into the Canvey Island monster.
So just out of curiosity, and hopefully it's not giving too much away, but I assume that the way that thing works is that somebody's put a tracker in these monsters at some point, or is there some other like mysterious way that this thing functions?
It is a little bit more mystical than that.
I was hoping for that.
Yeah, there was an aspect of when they were going after the Beast of Busco, we saw a couple elements of them tracking the Beast of Busco. The tracker was going out, so they had to rely on the more mystical cryptolabe, although, you know, that's sort of our cold introduction to it, so we don't sort of see all the aspects of it. But yeah, there's a little bit more of a mystical aspect, and that was a bit of a puzzle for me. As the world was expanding, I thought, how do I sort of unify all of these cryptids? You know, they're all different species, they're all different types of monsters. What's the unifying factor? And the cryptolabe and how it tracks them sort of comes into that. And it gets hinted at, and it continues to open up as the series goes on. But I can say there is a bit of a mystical aspect to it, or at least a science that we have yet to uncover and fully understand.
I'm looking forward to you diving into like the monster hunters a little bit more in the background altogether, because it's like you kind of have this little touch of the organization, but you don't know too much about it. And I'm definitely one of those people that it's like, obviously, like, you know, I want the good guys to win, but at the same time, like the mystery of the bad guys always like intrigues me, where I want to know more about their organization, how they function, how they formed and everything like that. So it's just like, I hope you kind of dive a little bit more into it, because it's like, I want to almost hear about like how it was formed in the first place. Like, who's the head of all of it? Why do they do the things they do? Just all of those mysterious questions. It kind of leaves you in the dark, which ends up drawing you to the dark, because you want to find a little bit more of those mysteries.
Awesome. I'm thrilled to hear that. And I can say that I think you will be very pleased with this second book and the books that will be coming out very soon.
I'm assuming that you already probably have the third one started, or you already have the idea for it, or.
Yeah, the third one, I can tell you it's already nearly finished, at least in terms of the manuscript. I still have to do nearly all of the illustrations and everything, and then begin the editing process. But it is nearly done. And I took a break to do some illustrations for the anniversary editions of my Chicken Boy books. But I can tell you the third Winslow book is already one of my favorites. I mean, I love all my books. Every new book that comes out is my new favorite. But this one has some of the best moments and the best new characters, and the depth to which we explore our existing characters is really just fantastic, and I'm so excited to share it.
Are you do you have like an idea of like where you kind of want to end the series, or are you just kind of running it as long as you kind of have the inspiration to do it?
I do have an idea for an ending. There's going to be at least five. There will be five in the main series, I can say that for sure.
And I was hoping you do side series. I'm assuming you're probably going to do one from the perspective of the monster hunters, right?
Okay. I'll give you an official scoop. Yes, there will be a spinoff. I will say that there's going to be a spinoff, and you will be very excited for it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be all about that one. And I'm hoping too that since you end up doing the audiobook for the first one, and you kind of had something nice set up with that, because you said it was like a friend or somebody that ended up wanting to come at you about doing everything, that all these books will probably be done as the audiobook format. Because like reading, it's one thing, but when you hear the author's voice narrating the characters, like creating the voices, it's just a whole different experience.
Yeah, I just had a meeting with my producer, in fact, and the old studio where I recorded this one is no longer available, and so he's kind of between studios, but we have been actively exploring where to record the next one and how to go about doing that, and we have some options ready to go, and I'm very excited to get back in the booth.
Dude, you definitely at some point too need to see if you can find somebody that does like animations and stuff, and you should make it as like a mini series, at least like the flashbacks and stuff. Like I definitely want to see it in some form of like video media at some point.
That would be
and
so
I know
cool.
Obviously it takes a lot to get picked up as far as you know, having some kind of big budget Hollywood movie. Not that that's really a much of a thing anymore, but the independent stuff ends up doing way better anyway. So I'm hoping at some point you'll do some type of like animation or something for it.
Yeah, I definitely would love I would always really like to hear anyone's idea for it, but an independent studio I think would be very exciting for me, because I feel like I could be involved with it more and have more of a connection to the process going forward. I would love to be as involved as I am allowed to be. And I do think that Winslow would make a really good film, or especially like a series, because it has that creature of the week type of vibe. So each episode could be devoted to one of Winslow's stories. It's kind of broken up that way. And I mean, the nice thing is that it's like, for instance, I mean, the first chapter or episode would just be two characters talking, and then, you know, have those flashbacks, and in a visual medium, you could illustrate his stories, have his narration play over, you know, the monsters being revealed. That'd be really cool. But animation would be cool. This is the first time I've gotten to hear that idea. I think that would be pretty sweet, because Winslow does draw the creatures in his journal of curiosities. We see him, you know, sketching messily into that every once in a while. So it'd be cool to see like a sort of emotion, almost like a motion comic, like with his sort of scratchy illustration style. That could be so cool.
I was going to say, you're going to have to at least get like a tabletop and try to make your hands look like all rough and like jagged looking or something. And like in the Ooh. Beginning of the automation or animation, you just have, you know, hands going into a screen where it's just like, you know, actual real life hands. Yeah. And it starts doing the drawing, and then it kind of just pans into the animation. That'd be a really cool intro
that,
for it.
That would be cool. Oh, that would be so cool. I would love to see that.
Shout out to all the animators out there, because I know I got some filmmakers and stuff that listen to the show. I know I got some animators. If you guys want a great story in order to be able to animate, you guys should definitely hit up Michael and see if you guys can at least do some type of mini web series or something, because guarantee you it would blow up. Like, people would absolutely love it. And if you did it as like half hour increments, dropped it every couple weeks or something, like, dude, people would pick up on that. And as it goes along, it would just kind of roll into the story. And you could even make that essentially even one of your like side spinoffs at some point.
Yeah.
You know, you could just have like individual random tales that he has, and it's just like Winslow's Tales or something, and it's just an animated series of all of his like old stories that don't really get thrown into the books, or you can even include some of the book ones. But there's a lot you could do with it, man. You got your own little universe going. You just gotta run with it, man.
My imagination is lighting up. I love it. These are great ideas, Shane. Let's do it.
Gotta inspire you, man.
I can't wait. That's so cool.
And I guess kind of diving into the second book, sure. For anybody that may be familiar with the first book already, why don't you kind of give them like a rough outline, I guess, not obviously giving too much away because you want people to kind of dive into the story and stuff, but give them kind of a rough outline, and maybe we can talk about some of the creatures that get featured in this one to kind of give people a little bit of a teaser about what Winslow might be experiencing in the next book.
Yeah, creature feature. We've got the second book in the Winslow Hofner series has just come out. It is Winslow Hofner's High Sailing Adventures. And this is a very unique book. It's one of the most unique books I've ever written because it is simultaneously a sequel and a prequel. And we dive into Winslow's past quite a lot. And we see him as a young man on a mighty sailing ship called the Trident, as a young deckhand. And we see how his adventures with the cryptids all began. What was the initial incident? What was the very first cryptid that he ever saw, and how he becomes sort of baptized into that whole otherworldly universe.
And well, I guess a good spot to do with this one, at least. I want to know what his first one is. Obviously, you don't have to give away the encounter or anything, but I want to know like description of the monster and kind of like what your inspiration was for it.
The first one. Well, that is actually quite a big reveal, so I will save it. But I will say that it takes place in Wales. It takes place in the Celts. So we see a few different creatures, but it's the first one is very, very special, and it sort of like launches him into his whole world. So that's a pretty big reveal. The way that it's written,
is it inspired by something real, or is it your own created created being?
All of these have what I call the real world tether. So as much as I do my own unique spin on them, it definitely has. If you look up any of these beings, they all sort of go back to either cryptozoology or folklore or mythology. I can tell you about one of my favorite ones in there, which was the Afonk.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up.
CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And so this is one of the strangest sort of cryptids. You can see him roaring on the shores of the back of the cover here. And in Welsh mythology, he was this creature was described in a few different ways, but one of the most popular descriptions was sort of the one that I went with, which was that it had the head of an alligator and then the body of a beaver. And I thought, oh, that's pretty
bizarre creature.
Yeah, it's like and so I always like zone in and zoom in on these really odd legends. I really like the obscure ones, and I thought, how can I Winslowify this? And in some instances I think, how can I make this weirder? But in this instance I thought, how do I make this weird thing like really biologically sound? How do I sort of marry these two together? And so I thought about it purely in silhouette, and I thought, that looks like a big platypus, like a supermassive monitoring. And so I started doing some research, and you know, sure enough, there was a recent paleontological discovery of a quite massive precursor to the platypus, which also existed alongside another one. It was the one that they newly discovered was Abdurodon Therakuschild. And it was, I think it was about the size of it was like 3 feet, and it had teeth, unlike the modern platypus.
Platypus was a cryptid to begin with too. Nobody even believed that thing existed from the description.
Yeah, it's perfect. And so I thought, oh, no way. So, I mean, it had these really cool teeth. They weren't quite as elaborate as the ones that are arming the jaws of Percival, my Afonk in the background here. But I thought there were multiple versions of this creature in the past, and they had teeth, and I said, okay, so let's scale it up to the size of a bear and make those teeth quite formidable, and we have a great Winslow Hofner monster.
And just out of curiosity, from doing some of your research, did you come across any like interesting encounter stories about that beast? Because I'd love to kind of hear some of the stuff that kind of inspired you to want to use that character in the first place.
Yeah, so this one, it's a little bit more mythical than some of the other ones. So it goes back to the Middle Ages. And one of the most major encounters was that this was kind of, they called it like a water demon. And it was something that had to be slayed because it could cause these great floods just from thrashing in the lakes. And so,
well, if it's beaver like and it's the size of a bear, imagine how big those dams would be that it would build. So, I mean, like it would kind of work, and like mentally, if you're really breaking it down.
And multiple knights had to face this incredible titan. But there was one, it has attachment to Arthurian legend, and Percival was said to be one of the knights that slayed this creature. And so that's why I named the creature Percival. And in the story, it's actually sort of this is the prized sort of possession of some of the new villains that we're introduced to in this book. And so it's almost a sarcastic name that they gave it. Winslow just ends up calling him Percy.
Which still kind of fits, though, because I think of like Percy. Mm-hmm. Percy Jackson or something kind of has that like mythological feel to it anyways. Because right. Percy's not a very common name. So like I instantly associate that with like the whole Percy Jackson series. And then it kind of gets into all like the Greek mythology concept and stuff. Yeah. So
plus he's a platypus, Percy the platypus. Which interestingly enough, Shane, apparently there have been modern giant platypus sightings. Just a few. So this would be when I saw this, and I learned about this on Jeremiah Byron on his Bigfoot Society reels on Instagram. He mentioned some Alaskan sightings of oceanic swimming platypuses that were seen off the coast of Alaska. They were like 6 feet long, and I was like, ooh. So not only were they twice now the size of this Abduridon Theracus child prehistoric platypus, but they're also ocean dwelling, which is interesting. So and Carl Schuker has been looking into those. Apparently I saw some articles on his blog.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
And just out of curiosity, where does the next Winslow book, does that take place in the same area that the first one does, where it's kind of like North America and stuff, or does he kind of like travel around? So you kind of try to keep certain monsters within certain parameters of like where their kind of folklore comes from.
Yeah. So the majority of the Winslow Hofner series, at least in terms of when we are in the current present timeline, is Winslow, the harbor town of Bayfield, which takes place in Nova Scotia. And then for a lot of the flashbacks in this current in the latest book here, we're traveling all over the place. So this is definitely it's earning the title High Sailing Adventures. But we're spending a lot of time in Wales, in Scotland, and things of that sort.
It looks like from the cover too, I assume he has some type of experience with a plesiosaur or a Nessie-like being too.
Yep, the granddaddy of all cryptids makes an incredible appearance. The Loch Ness
Monster. Is it Nessie herself,
Nessie herself? Yes.
So it's kind of like I'm assuming that you kind of have this thing subconsciously going for the books, where it's like you have your one that's just like the solid real world cryptid that people kind of want to experience. And then the rest are kind of influenced from multiple different places. Is that kind of how you kind of roll the books?
I have sort of the classics alongside the really weird ones, I notice. not too purposefully. I'm just drawn to certain things, but I do notice that there's a nice healthy mix between the super obscure and the super familiar. For instance, they end up getting featured on my promotional material. I have for my book signings, I have these collectible bookmarks that I do, and they have some of the artwork in full color on there. And we have Nessie, and then we have the Morgar. And so in the previous one, we had Gambo the fire breathing fish and Gigantes the Kraken. So I'm noticing I'm doing like a super recognizable one in the Kraken, and then the super obscure one with Gambo. And then the second series, we sold out of those. And so the second series, which is in line with the second book here, follows that same pattern. We have the most recognizable cryptid ever, probably, with the Loch Ness Monster. And then we have the Morgar, which is like, what? You know, what's that one? And that's cool. That's its name means sea giant. That's a Cornish legend. And it has a few different descriptions, usually either a plesiosaur, a classic sea dragon sort of look. But the photographs that exist of this thing, it's so lumpy and gooey looking and perfectly in silhouette. And so I thought, that looks like a big slug. And so my interpretation of the Morgar in Winslow Hofner's High Sailing Adventures is a super massive sea slug. I think I can actually show you. And then the puzzle begins. How do you make that frightening and formidable? And you just put a bunch of teeth on it. It seems to be the answer. And so here's my Morgar right there.
kind of reminds me of like an aquatic version of like a giant like Mongolian death worm or like the sandworm or like the tremors thing.
It has that big mouth that sort of peels open and is just wreaths and wreaths of fangs. It's incredible. This is actually one of my favorite pictures in the book here. Winslow's trying
really
to
cool.
fend this thing off with just a mop on the bow of the trident, which was sort of his first job as a deckhand.
Kind of has more of the like leech feel to it when you add the teeth to it, which makes it a little bit more frightening.
Leeches and lampreys, and I sort of combined a few different types of mouths. I had all kinds of like, oh boy, my reference photos for these creatures is so so intense. You know, I have all kinds of files of weird creatures to look at and then combine. It's fun.
Are you planning on, like, obviously he's like a sailor and it's all like sailor stories, sailor type cryptids and stuff. But if you're kind of diving into the past and everything a little bit and with the, like the monster hunter specifically, it doesn't necessarily, I don't know how you kind of line it up in your head, but it seems like it may not just specifically be aquatic stuff, but Winslow kind of gears towards the aquatic stuff. When you go farther into like the books and everything, are you planning on trying to kind of connect stuff and bring in more of like the land beast too? Or are you kind of leaving that out for maybe if you get into like your Monster Hunter series or?
Yeah, definitely in the future, we're going to explore the things that go bump in the night on land in the future connected books. But for Winslow, it's definitely a seafaring nautical type of adventure, and things at least have an aquatic slant or theme to them, or at least just slightly. But we do have one really cool flying creature, a flying humanoid type creature in this book.
Is it the legendary Mothman kind of connection, or is it something completely all its own?
Your instincts are quite honed. It is not exactly the Mothman, but it is its Chilean cousin. It's far less well-known Chilean cousin, the Mantaman. And so it has, it was described as this thing that sort of like swam through the air, but it very much had the aesthetic of Mothman. But
it's usually people describing stuff of what they're familiar with. Yeah, so it's like, you know, exactly. People from there may not be familiar with a moth, but they're familiar with like why am I brain farting the name? You just said it.
Mantas.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they're more familiar with that. So they just try to describe stuff of what they're familiar with. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they could be the same description when you actually physically see them in front of you, but it's just two different groups of people trying to describe it with what they're familiar with.
It was cool. You know, I saw the scene in my head, and it was this flying humanoid creature looking like a sentient shadow sort of swooping and going after our journalist characters in Winslow's truck. And I thought that looks like the Mothman. And around the time that I was researching the book, getting ready to write the book, I went to the Mothman Festival back in 2019. I got to speak to Faye DeWitt, one of the original Mothman witnesses, and she told me her story.
Lady in the car who had it mm-hmm. flying up next to the car.
She was a little kid at the time, and she told me about that. And she just started. I sat next to her, and she just told me her whole story. And it was a really cool experience, and she was just so certain about it. And I thought, wow. And I just got more and more the sense that this particular creature in the Winslow Hofner story isn't quite the Mothman. But in my research, I kind of had the instinct. I was like, it's gargoyle-ish. It's you know, a little bit more like it's not. It doesn't have that sort of downy, feathery look that the Mothman has. This one's really slick and, you know, gooey, you know. and so I looked that up, and then I found the encounters with the Mantaman, which there was only like two, and it was in Chile, and I thought perfect, you know. And I tend to gravitate toward those obscure ones, and that of
has
course
that aquatic feel with the name too, like you were
exactly.
saying.
Exactly. And so it has that nice little tether to the aquatic for the Winslow Hofner series. So we've got the Mantaman in Winslow too.
I'm looking forward to reading about that one. That one sounds absolutely fantastic. I'm looking forward to the book altogether.
Thank you.
I'm gonna have to at Small Town Monster Fest too. Maybe cross my fingers that maybe it'll be some type of audiobook by then, but hopefully. No matter what, I'll have to pick
it's
up
possible.
A copy of the
it's
book
possible.
Itself because I got to have it on the bookshelf at least.
Awesome. Yeah, we will hook you up, my friend.
And just like a random idea, I don't know, again, what your plans are for as far as like the side ventures and everything go, but you can almost essentially do something where it's like a land version of Winslow, yeah, where it's like a hunter who had a weird experience, and then he got started like getting entangled in with like the monster hunters and stuff, and then like the monster hunters could have like, you know, the aquatic side that they do the aquatic stuff, and then they also have their like land hunters or something. You can almost have like the two different sides where there's this hero story about this guy who does all the land cryptids, and then you have Winslow who's like the aquatic hero, you know, and you have two different side stories. Then maybe at some point you could bring them back full circle where they actually intersect with each other or something, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you do, you got to have that they're going to be the rough characters, so they have to have some type of little spat at first or something, like Winslow accidentally punches the one guy and he's like, man, I'm on your side, what are you doing here, or something. You got to like tie it in somehow, but I don't imagine them instantly getting along right off the bat. I feel, yeah, like there has to be some type of a little scrimmage, and then they're like, oh, okay, we're thinking the same here, we're good.
Winslow does have a habit of scrapping with people, as we've seen. Yeah, it's going to have the other books in the sort of connected world are going to have their own genre, and it's going to be maybe a little bit more sci-fi, kind of like a little touch of horror, even little darker, very, very different, but definitely connected. And it's going to definitely have a matching vibe. And what else can I say? I'll say this. It's not so much a sequel series as much as it runs in parallel.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna
that's
be
kind of what I imagine it as. Yeah. It's all within the same universe, but its own story.
So I'm planning to sort of have, you'll even see some events from different angles. so that's a big exclusive. I haven't said that anywhere before. So you'll see different perspectives, different angles of similar events, and the stories will the timeline of each series will sort of run in parallel.
See, I don't want to guess away too much because I don't want to have you to reveal too much, but I'm assuming that one of the perspectives that you might show in one of the side books is the guy who's a monster hunter who's actually still friends with Winslow, and they have that interaction. They're like, hey, what's up, man? He's like, oh, I see you're still doing this stuff. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, I see you're still doing that stuff then.
Yeah. Santiano. Yeah, he will definitely make an appearance. But there will be a whole new cast of characters too.
And then I'm hoping you bring the reporter back too. Like, I could see a lot of like character progression for him too, where he starts becoming like, you know, like a, like Winslow's like sidekick almost or something, yeah, you know, cause he could be like the new, you know, they kind of like lead in with stuff with certain stories where you have like the older guy who's kind of like the guide. Then you have the younger guy who's kind of embarking on his journey. And by the end of it, he turns into basically what that other person was when that character doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
I'm kind of hoping, and I have that feel that you're trying to do that a little bit with the reporter.
Yeah. John is definitely, his story, John is kind of our main character. He's our lens into the world, and his story is very, very important. So in the first book, his arc is kind of one from, he evolves from a skeptic to a believer. And then in the books moving forward, it's going to be about, you know, the consequences of believing. It's like your knowledge itself sort of wades you into danger. So then he's going to be going on a journey from a cautious person to a brave person, and what that means, as he wades deeper and deeper into Winslow's more magical world.
And just out of curiosity too, Winslow has that aspect where like the monsters are drawn to him himself.
Right.
Is that going to be one of those things that kind of remains mysterious, or is that going to be kind of explained why the monsters gravitate to him at some point?
I think that will, reveal itself in unique ways to those who read it. I think that you can read certain things in different sorts of ways. And yes, in my mind, I understand why it has happened. And even in sort of the second book, you can kind of get a sense of it. But there's definitely a mystery, as with a lot of these things, there's sort of a mystery, but, you can sort of intuit the reason for that. Winslow's connection with the beast definitely gets a lot of explanation in the second book. So I think when readers dive into the second book and read it carefully, they can get a strong sense of that.
See, I was kind of having two guesses that either one, it was kind of like the Tulpa idea where it's like, because he imagines these things end up becoming somewhat of like a reality. Or the other aspect of it is that you said that there was some like mystical aspect to like the Cryptolid. And I assume that it might have some type of connection where it's like, he almost has the same mystical ability, but he doesn't need a device to do it.
I can't wait for you to read the second book because it's going to be super interesting to hear how you interpret it specifically.
Dude, I'm one of those people that when I read a story, like I kind of look past a lot of it and I try to like foreshadow and I try to just like create more depth to the characters in my head, try to get into the characters' perspectives, try to like understand their personality and everything. So like the whole time I read books, man, I just theorize about all of it. Same with like movies and stuff, which is like almost fun. But I like the fact with your book that it's still very open, that I don't know which direction it would go, because it's like a lot of movies I watch. It's like I'm like, this is what's going to happen in the first 5 minutes. And by the end of the movie, it's like, ah, there you go. But with your stuff, it's just, you kind of leave it with this like little bit of like an open end to it, where it's like, just because of the way you write, I don't know which direction it's going to go, which is why I think I enjoyed the book so much, is because it's really hard for me to find stuff that I don't guess ahead of time. And just the way you wrote it, it's just, it leaves multiple possibilities still open. So it's just like, I don't know which path to start going down mentally as far as like where the characters and progression of the story is going to go.
Thank you. That's a big compliment. And I think you will really, really enjoy the second book. I had an excellent conversation with one of my writer friends and colleagues, Brian Nowak, on his show, All Things Writing. He read the second book and he told me he was especially surprised by the direction it took. He did not expect it at all. But then by the end of the book, he said, I realized that that's the only way it could have gone. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I was very happy with that analysis from him. And I'm super curious to hear your thoughts on it when you get a chance to read it.
So no matter what, I'll have to have you come back on the show when the third one comes out. And hopefully by then I'll have the second one already down. And then we can kind of do this a backtrack slash a little bit of the future type of thing like we did with this one.
Yeah, I like your analysis of stuff.
Well, I appreciate that, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate you sharing the book in the first place, because obviously I bought the book and everything, but sharing the audiobook was just, I greatly, greatly appreciate that. And I just want to say thank you again for, you know, taking me to be one of the people that get a chance to read the audiobook and leave the reviews and everything for it. Like, I absolutely loved it, man.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It means a lot. It means a lot getting the feedback from it that you gave. I don't know when this review will post, but I am having a special on the audiobook on Kobo through May 7th.
Actually, this will be dropping literally tomorrow.
No,
so anything
kidding
that you want to promote, have at it, man.
Oh, all right. Well, this will be perfect timing then for your listeners. I recently had to leave Spotify because they had updated their terms of use for the author specifically, and it wasn't a good situation. So I have the audiobook on Kobo now for Winslow Hoffner's Incredible Encounters, the first book. And I'm doing a special for 20% off. And so if you use the promo code WHIE20, that's the acronym for the title of the book, plus 20 for 20% off, then you can get to experience that for 20% off. And Kobo has been a really nice platform with a really fair terms of use. They've been really nice to me. So if you go to michaelthompsonbooks.com, I've got the trailer for the audiobook right on top, and then all the information and the direct link for that promo. So I think it's a really cool way to experience the book. If you watch that trailer, you can hear just a little bit of some of the voices and some of the story that you can come to expect. And then if you follow that link, then that'll take you right there.
And of course, if you send me that code, all those links and everything, I'll put it right down in the show description so people can find it quick and easy, because I want to make sure I include that promo code
so people can
use it and pick it up. So,
oh, yeah, that would be great.
And just another suggestion too, man, that might kind of save you a little bit. I know you sell the CDs and stuff like that at events, but, you know, even beyond like the book companies and stuff, man, I would just, you know, since you're active on social media, I would just offer like downloads of it and just, you know, put it in like a Google Drive or something and just make individual files for each person so they can only they can access it and stuff. But I mean, I would just honestly just, you know, sell straight MP3 copies of it too, because a lot of people like having that option to be able to have it on their computer, their phone, and not just have to have that specific app on their phone in order to listen to it.
Yeah. Every once in a while when I have them in stock, I have a cool book in a bottle for Winslow Hoffner's Incredible Encounters, the audiobook, and that's on a USB. And so that's been a popular one, but I haven't been able to get the materials for that. It's rare to have that sort of come together. It's like lightning in a bottle, haha. But that's been a fun platform. But I'll definitely look into things of that sort for sure.
I mean, just a cool idea too, if you're trying to do it where it's like the MP3 or the flash drive in a bottle too. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's about all the green recycle stuff too. You can even go to like recycling plants, man, and just pick up some glass bottles. Mm-hmm. Really, really cheap. They'll have that old beat up rustic look to them and everything. And you can make it look like straight messages in a bottle with like old bottles. So it kind of has that feel to it.
Yeah. When we have that product, we have, we got a little, we got twine and we got the wrapped up sort of, the table of contents is on this scroll that's on the inside. So it's pretty fun.
That's super cool, man. Yeah. I like it. I could definitely already like picture that in my head. And if you're going to do something with an MP3 drive or with a flash drive, I would imagine that you do something creative with it. And again, I don't think you could have taken that any other way. That's like perfectly accompanies and fits mm-hmm. the atmosphere of the book in the first place to do the message in a bottle with the MP3 / flash drive the book.
Thank you. Yeah. Keeping it themed, you know, had to do something fun.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back. So let's hop right in.
And before we start wrapping up and everything, man, I want to give you a little bit of an opportunity to be able to promote anything that you got going on. So if there's any events you got going on the next couple months that you kind of just want to run over again, I know you mentioned a couple in the beginning, let people know where they are, the dates and everything in case they want to physically come and get a book. Tell people where they can get a signed copy of the book if they want to get it, because obviously everybody wants a signed copy of the book. Just kind of run through everything, man. Let everybody know where they can find you on social media, pick up your books, any events you got going on, just anything to promote yourself, man.
All right, cool. Yeah. You can find me on social media at @mthompson_books on Instagram, at Michael Thompson Books on Facebook. And you can find all my links and all the descriptions about all of my books on michaelthompsonbooks.com. As far as in-person appearances goes, we've got Encounter Quest coming up. That's going to be the most recent one, the most forthcoming one on April 13th.
My co-host is going to be there, actually. So you're going to get to meet Oren.
Oh, yeah. I did meet Oren, actually, my first Encounter Quest. We hung out. We were at the party with Ron Moorhead and everyone. That was a really fun time. But yeah, April.
Did you know
13th.
That? Just out of curiosity, did you know that him and I were connected?
Did I know at the time? I don't remember. Well, I think I was on your show, but it's just a matter of like, was that before or after Encounter Quest? I think. So I did not know at the time because afterward, I came on and I had busted my ankle and then you were like, Oren wanted me to ask you how's the foot,
That's right. I forgot about that.
It was just afterward. Yeah. So.
But he's going to be at Small Town Monster Fest,
and I'm
going to
be extra careful stepping off of curbs.
He's going to be at Small Town Monster Fest, too, so all three of us will be able to hang out at Small Town Monster Fest this year, too.
Yeah. Encounter Quest, April 13th. It's going to be fun. The Snarly Yow's Halloween in April is going to be on the 20th. I don't know if you're going to be at that one.
I'm actually going to be at his Halloween one in October,
Halloween, cool.
And I'm going to be speaking and emceeing the speaker. So I'll be vending. Yes. I'll be all around at that one.
I love all of his shows. I'm so excited for that. Monster Fest, June 29th. We're also going to be at the Withful UFO Fest and Bigfoot Con, sponsored by ECBRO in June. Cryptid Fest up in Massachusetts, September 14th. I'm going to be speaking there. And of course, Cryptid Con in November. So we've got all kinds of great stuff on the schedule, and it's expanding, you know, by the moment. So you can keep up with all that on michaelthompsonbooks.com.
Perfect. And then just out of curiosity, I don't know if you ended up covering it through that, but if people did want a signed copy of the book, do you offer it on your website?
Currently, there's the best way to get signed copies would be on Cryptid HQ, my friend Mike Hughes' website. You can go to Cryptid HQ, and you can click on books, and he has... his is, I think, the only place where you can order online autographed copies. Otherwise, just come find me at one of these great cryptid shows, and then I'll sign the book in person.
Perfect, perfect. And I'll have to, of course, because you mentioned it too, I'll have to make sure I grab one of those bookmarks and one of your promotional things you do.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind saving me one until Small Town Monster Fest, I greatly appreciate it. I got the bottle cap. I got the book. I got bookmarking the book and everything. So got to collect it, of course, for the second book too, because I already had it for the first book. I might as well complete the collection.
Yeah, get a complete set for you. Absolutely, my friend.
And before we start completely wrapping up, man, I always like to do words of wisdom. Not that this has been a low note show, but I always like to say to leave everything on a high note. So if there's any words of wisdom you'd like to bestow on the listeners, maybe just some of the fellow writers out there, people that are in the process of writing their stories or something, you know, what might your words of wisdom be?
For those who are writing their own story, I always say, you know, people are, you know, they get kind of wrapped up in, you know, how they're going to sell the book and how they're going to promote it and while they're still working on it. And I always say, write the best story that you can. Write the story that comes to you. You know, the biggest mistake that any writer can make or any creative person can make is to write something that they think will appeal to other people. And but the most important thing to remember is you are your first reader, you're your first listener, whatever type of art that you make. So you got to make something that's entertaining to you, because chances are that there's going to be people who have the same taste as you when you do that. So write something for yourself as your first audience, and then worry later about how you're going to how you're going to spread the word, because you've at least confirmed that there's one person who likes it. So and that's how the sort of the passion that you have for it will sort of come out through the page, through the characters, or whatever type of art you make. That's how you'll reach people.
I mean, people like the authenticity. And I actually heard a statistic the other day that said that 73% of millennials and Gen Z would rather have original stories done by independent artists / producers / creators than big budget Hollywood movies, specifically Hollywood movies that are prequels, sequels, remakes. So we're in the right time that if people want to get into their own projects, people have this, again, they like the authenticity. They like supporting the artists themselves. They don't like, you know, supporting a giant Hollywood studio. They want to support the independent. So like, if there was ever a time to be able to be an independent creator and actually do something with it and get into an audience, now is the time. And just being, again, authentic with yourself, being yourself when it comes to all this stuff, whether you're a writer, you're a podcaster, you're an artist, any of that, people, they really drawn to that kind of stuff. People like people that are original and completely themselves. And it just kind of pushes people to try to promote that person more, because they have that real world connection with them versus it just being like simply a story. Because half the time now it's like, you know, people didn't really care too much back in the day about who was like producing the movie, who was whatever. They just cared about like the actors in the movie themselves, where it seems like nowadays people care more about the person that wrote and created the story than they do about the actors that are in the movie. And it seems like in the past, of course, people were more concerned with, you know, the Hollywood version. They're like, oh, the movies are better. The movies are better. And now we're moving into an era where it's like people are noticing every single detail of a book that's left out of a movie, and they don't like that fact. They want every detail that's in the book in the movie. So it's just, again, the right time to do that kind of stuff and become an independent creator, become an independent artist. And that was even more so, too, why I said the whole thing about you doing your stuff as animation is because I'd want to see it with you having full creative control over it, because, you know, you let a big budget studio take over your project. The next thing you know, it's like based on your project, you know, like how they did Texas Chainsaw Massacre based on a true story. But the only connection with that was Ed Gein, which has nothing to do with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is faintly inspired. So it's just like, you know, I want to see your stuff created in some form of video media, but you got to have full creative control over it. And you can't let somebody just run off with it and create their own story. Otherwise, it's just, it's not what it should be, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's exactly right. I do think that we are moving into that area, and I have noticed that as well. I think we're definitely moving into a time where entertainment is going to be independent more so. And I think that people want to have that connection with the creator, like you said. I do feel that
niche,
feel
now
optimistic,
too.
And I think it is. I feel that energy. I think it's moving toward that for sure.
It's more niche now, too, that people don't want the concept of something being created for everybody. It's like everybody wants something that feels like it was created specifically for them. And, you know, you may be creating something for yourself, kind of like what you're saying, not realizing that there's a couple thousand other people that want exactly you for you and the story that you wrote. And it just, again, the people appreciate that kind of stuff. I can't say it enough.
Oh, yeah.
People just want their niche, and they want something that feels like it was created for them specifically rather than just for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I had no idea. The cryptids, I mean, I thought Winslow was going to be, okay, this is going to be my fun, weird cryptid sea story thing, and it's going to sort of sit on the side of my table, and then my other books will sort of be the stars. But it's been the inversion. The cryptid sea stories, the weirdest thing on my table has actually been the star for the most part. And that's been pretty cool to see, especially with all these great cryptid shows that just came out of nowhere right after the lockdowns. And I was like, wow, you know, so Winslow had this renaissance of popularity after that happened. And I thought, okay. And so that's why I'm focusing on that now and expanding that. And it's been really, really cool. It's been an honor, to get to be the writer and to bring, Winslow's story to life and be the first reader, like I said, you know, cause I love these stories and I'm entertained by them so much. And it's really fun finding people who love the stories and cherish the characters as much as I do.
Dude, it's one of those things too. The cryptid community is just one of the best groups of people ever. So Absolutely. It's just like you kind of being a little bit different than most in the cryptid community, considering that, you know, you wrote a fiction book that's inspired by a lot of stuff in real world, but it's just awesome that you gravitated toward the cryptid community. They gravitated towards you. And even though you're doing something different than a lot of the cryptid community, you were like fully accepted in. And I feel like that's also what's kind of made your book flourish. All of that is just having this great community of people behind your book and you just, again, finding your right niche in your right spot. And then just, it took off from there, man.
For sure. Yeah. It's all timing. And I'm very grateful for it. And I'm grateful I met all kinds of cool people like yourself and all the great, cryptid folks at all of these shows. I can't wait to see all my cryptid friends at these great events. It's always a blast.
Small Town Monster Fest too, man.
Monster
you got
Fest
2 months.
Ooh, yes.
We'll be hanging out again.
Yeah.
But as for right now, man, I appreciate you making the time to come on. Really looking forward to the book. Looking forward to getting to hang out with you again soon. And can't wait for next time you come on the show and we get to have another awesome conversation about your fantastic stories of Winslow Hofner, man.
Most definitely. Thank you.
If you guys enjoyed this episode, don't forget to leave a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify. I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Helps to push up the show in the algorithms, makes it so that more people are involved in the community. I can get some bigger guests on the show and possibly get to a point where I can do this full time for you guys. But we got to keep pushing the show up in the algorithms, make it so that more people are able to see the show. And the only way it's going to work is with your guys' help. And if you guys leave a 5-star review, of course, I will read it on the show and give you guys a big shout out. And if you don't do any of that, at least, you know, I just appreciate that you guys listen. And you guys could always put the show on auto download and make it so that I get a listen for every single episode that I drop. And you guys can also share the show through word of mouth with friends. It's an awesome organic way to help the show grow. I do a lot of promoting, obviously, on my end, but I need your guys' help, of course. I need to form somewhat of a inquiry street team, but we'll figure that out eventually. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me for any other reason whatsoever, be it that you want to share some fan art, have a conversation, be a guest on the show, have me as a guest on your show, sponsor the show, any of that stuff, you guys can get up with me through social media. Any of my many profiles is totally a viable option, which are all, again, available down in the show description. You guys can also email me at inquiriesofallrealitypodcast@outlook.com, or you guys can go to the link tree, fill out the submission form, and that will go directly to my email, of course. But make sure you guys check your spam and junk folders. Make sure nothing gets missed in the process, because I do respond to every single message that I get from you guys. But everything, a single thing that I've mentioned throughout the entire show, is available in the show notes down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.